Republicans are hoping to block a lawsuit filed by a national Democratic law firm that would allow voters to return absentee ballots in drop boxes. It's Thursday, August 10th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says roughly 800 public water systems which were tested are meeting the state's drinking water standards for PFAS. And abortion has been a top issue in Wisconsin politics. WPR's Sean Johnson and Anya Van Wagtendonk will look into how the political battle lines around abortion were formed. Stay with us.
If you've never given before, but you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's a sign it's time to donate. It means that WPR is important to you, and you are important to us. We're listener-supported radio, which means we count on money from people like you to make the programs possible. Make your first-ever contribution today at WPR.org. Thank you.
Republicans are seeking to intervene in a challenge to absentee voting practices in Wisconsin. As Anya Van Wagtendonk reports, the move comes after Democratic groups filed a lawsuit last month to overturn the state ban on voter drop boxes.
The Democratic lawsuit challenges restrictions on drop boxes and seeks to make it easier for voters to fix mistakes on mail-in ballots. Republican groups filed a motion this week to join that lawsuit. They want to uphold current Wisconsin law. Gates McGavick is the legal communications director for the Republican National Committee.
Early voting, absentee voting is something that the RNC is very much coming to embrace, but there have to be appropriate safeguards in place. And the issue with this lawsuit is it tries to get rid of some of those safeguards.
The progressive plaintiffs in the lawsuit say that restricting absentee voting limits access for everyone, but especially older people and people with disabilities. Anya Van Wagtendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says all of the public water systems tested so far are meeting the state's drinking water standards for PFAS. Danielle Kading reports that's according to early sampling results.
About 800 public water supplies have collected more than 1,500 samples for PFAS. That's according to Kyle Burton. He's a field operations director with the DNR. Burton says all of them are meeting state standards, and he says nearly 63% of samples detected no trace of the chemicals.
It's a positive to see that there is a significant majority of the systems that we're getting sample results from that are not negatively impacted, but we still have a lot of data to collect.
Around 2,000 systems are required to test for PFAS. While all sampled so far are meeting state limits, environmental advocates say around 30 systems exceed more stringent standards proposed by the EPA. Federal regulators plan to issue a final rule on PFAS limits in drinking water by the end of this year. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Clerks say changes to absentee ballot envelopes will help prevent one of the most common mistakes that they see. Oftentimes, inaccurate or incomplete witness information on the envelope disqualifies the whole vote. The Wisconsin Elections Commission voted to add three major changes to the envelopes. There will be numbered instructions, a colored bar across the top, and an alert symbol next to the witness information section. Caitlin Bernard is a municipal clerk for the city of Wausau. She says the instructions will help people understand how to submit their ballots.
We are doing our due diligence on the front end to make sure that every eligible ballot can be counted on Election Day.
The new envelopes are being paid for with federal funding. They will be used for the first time in the spring primary. 2,000 Milwaukee kids got to spend their day at American Family Field, cheering on the Milwaukee Brewers on Wednesday. Evan Casey reports on what it meant to them.
The kids were of 25 neighborhood summer programs serving youth across the city. Bryson Robinson is 13 years old. He attended his first Brewers game with the Neighborhood House of Milwaukee.
Compared to just sitting at home, it's better, way better.
The Milwaukee Brewers Community Foundation helped pay for the tickets as part of the Safer City MKE initiative. That initiative is aimed at getting kids off the streets during the summer. Danielle Carter says if she wasn't at the game, she'd be in her room.
Usually when I'm in my room and I don't think about stuff that's helpful, so to be out here is really nice.
Luckily, she got to see a Brewers victory. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, even after the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Roe v. Wade decided to strike down bans on abortion, Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban continued to exist. We'll take a look at how the state's abortion politics 50 years ago kept the pre-Civil War abortion ban in the books. Stay with us.
Gardening in Wisconsin is a year-round job, and Garden Talk is here for you throughout every season. We help you battle relentless pests and pick your favorite mulch. We also cover how to care for houseplants and successful methods for starting seeds inside. We want to know what keeps your garden growing. Join me, Larry Mueller, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, Fridays at 11 and Saturday mornings at 6, or online anytime.
And finally, a challenge to Wisconsin's abortion ban could already be making its way to the state Supreme Court. That law was first passed in 1849. It went back into effect last June when Roe v. Wade was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. In our series, How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849, WPR reporters explore how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since. In Part 4, Sean Johnson and Anya Van Wagtendonk look at how the ban stayed on the books for nearly 50 years after the Roe v. Wade decision made it unenforceable in 1973. The answer starts with understanding how vastly different abortion politics were at the time.
Just 5 years after the U.S. Supreme Court issued its Roe v. Wade decision, there was an effort in the Wisconsin legislature to restrict the use of Medicaid funds for abortions.
Some of this debate unfolded the way you might imagine, like protests that erupted in the assembly gallery.
The sergeant will clear the gallery. The sergeant will clear the galleries.
Or inflammatory speeches from lawmakers.
This doesn't close the door to these goody-goods that want to have their good times and then say, oh, we made a mistake, and now you got to come and help me out.
A Democratic governor, Martin Schreiber, vetoed the bill.
I know for sure that a pregnant woman is a human being, a person. I, in my own mind, do not know when a fetus becomes a human being, a person.
And legislators felt so strongly about the issue that they tried to override that veto.
But the similarities between this abortion debate in 1978 and the way it's discussed today stop there, because this was a Democratic supermajority legislature pushing for abortion restrictions.
And if it weren't for a handful of Republicans who supported access to abortion, they would have gotten exactly what they wanted.
Republican Representative Sheehan Donahue opposed the bill from the floor of the Wisconsin Assembly.
This is not an easy vote for anyone. Ladies and gentlemen, what you do here today, you will have to live with the rest of your lives.
And Donahue still remembers the debate today.
This legislation, in my opinion, did damage to the equality of women in control over their own bodies.
At this moment in time, the parties were split on abortion throughout the country, says Mary Ziegler, a leading expert on the history of abortion in the post-Roe versus Wade era.
The idea that the Republican Party was the party of life, as Ronald Reagan put it, or the anti-abortion party, and the Democrats were supportive of legal abortion wouldn't really coalesce until the early 80s.
That started to change as politicians faced consequences for their stances on abortion.
Sometimes the consequences were personal. Gary Goyke was a Democratic state senator from Oshkosh. He voted for the bill restricting abortion funds.
But he says the 1978 debate moved him toward a belief in abortion rights. Goyke was Catholic and remembers being confronted at church.
A lady would come sit right in the front row, and at every service that I was at, every mass I was at, she would stand up and say, let us pray that Senator Goyke learns to respect life. And then the parish would say, Lord, hear our prayer, right? And I am sitting right in front. So it was in your face.
For other lawmakers, the issue may have cost them their jobs. When Barbara Lohrmann was first elected as a Republican state senator in 1980, she openly supported abortion access. She says nobody blinked.
You know, almost anybody could fit in either party, frankly.
But by 1994, it was a different story. After the 1990 census, Republicans redrew her district. It got a lot more conservative.
She drew a primary challenge from Scott Fitzgerald, someone she calls a, quote, darling of the right wing. She says anti-abortion activists threw their weight behind him.
Yeah, those are very devoted, conscientious voters. And like overnight, yard signs went up and down the highway. And I saw that and I thought, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem.
Fitzgerald won. He'd later become the Senate's majority leader and now represents the area in Congress.
For Republicans, the shift toward anti-abortion candidates led to anti-abortion laws. Fitzgerald was the lead sponsor of a bill that banned partial birth abortion in Wisconsin.
Democrats were undergoing their own shift toward abortion rights politics. In the 1990 race for attorney general, the Republican incumbent supported overturning Roe v. Wade. His Democratic challenger, Jim Doyle, used it to campaign against him.
That was the number one issue. That's how I got elected. So it really was, it was really always a very important issue to me.
But it would be years before Wisconsin Democrats were once again in a position to change abortion laws.
Their chance came in 2009. Doyle was governor by then. His fellow Democrats had just retaken both chambers of the legislature.
Doyle knew the state's dormant pre-Civil War abortion ban was still on the books, and this could be the chance to get rid of it.
This was certainly an issue, and I wanted to do it, to repeal the old law.
But Democrats had the slimmest of majorities in the Wisconsin Assembly, and when it came to abortion, they didn't really have one at all.
Bob Ziegelbauer was one of the legislature's remaining anti-abortion Democrats.
If they asked me, it would be a short conversation. I just said no.
Ziegelbauer says this was clear to everyone in the Democratic caucus. They could work together on some issues, but not on abortion.
He says it was a cordial relationship most of the time, until he supported a Republican measure to restrict abortion.
That was the only time I crossed that line, and that line is pretty bright. They don't want you doing that.
Democratic leaders took away Ziegelbauer's committee chairmanship. Soon after, he left the party.
The Democratic majority was short-lived. 2 years later, a Republican wave election gave the GOP control of the legislature and brought Scott Walker into the governor's office.
I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position I think is consistent with many Americans out there.
And Republicans used their power. They pulled state funding from Planned Parenthood. They required patients seeking an abortion to view an ultrasound first. And they passed a 20-week abortion ban.
Anti-abortion victories around the country culminated last year when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
For the abortion rights Democratic Party, it was, in some ways, the worst-case scenario. But strictly politically speaking, it's had a galvanizing effect.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers, who was viewed as vulnerable in his bid for re-election, ran hard on the issue of abortion.
And he won.
Holy mackerel, folks, how about that?
Justice Janet Protasiewicz placed abortion rights front and center in her campaign for state Supreme Court earlier this year.
And she won.
Well, Wisconsin, guess what? We did it! We did it!
She was sworn in last week, giving liberals a majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court for the first time in 15 years.
And that's where things stand now. That state Supreme Court could have the final say on any challenges to Wisconsin's abortion laws. If a pending lawsuit succeeds, the abortion ban could be gone.
Today's Democratic Party is pushing hard for this. But here's the catch. Striking down the 19th century ban would restore the laws that were passed in the years after Roe.
That means abortion restrictions from the late 70s all the way to the Walker years would be back on the books. And the fight over abortion in post-Roe Wisconsin would go on. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm Sean Johnson.
You can find more from our series at WPR.org/1849. PBS Wisconsin's Here and Now will also air a series of reports on abortion in the state starting tomorrow night at 7:30. And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers today were Mallory Chang and John Davis. As always, you can catch us every single weekday morning wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, subscribe, leave us a rating and review, let us know how we're doing. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.